Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey, this is John Zadak, TV voice of the Cincinnati Reds, and you're up for late night Reds talk.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday night. It's so great to see you all for another edition of Late Night Reds Talk Live, part of the Believe Podcast Network, and brought to you by our good friends at Bet Online. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every sports league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. Head to BetOnline today and use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V 50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. I'm Tim Daniel. I'm very excited for this week's episode. Obviously had a lot of fun getting to see all of you this weekend, but to be back here on the mics with you, of course, is always a good time, starting with our excellent producer, Mr. Nick Kirby.
Hey, what's going on? Weird to do a live broadcast after a game and it be less than a 3-hour game. Used to like these 4-hour marathons. So this is a different experience.
Yeah, I know. I like am awake for it. And yeah, that's a miracle. Also joining us, as always, our good friend, former big league pitcher himself, Mr. Carlos Guevara.
What's happening, boys? How y'all doing?
Good. I'm glad to see you got back to Texas. Okay.
Yeah, it was quite the trip back.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Mondays in CBG, man. Whew. And joining us this week, who we also got to hang out with this weekend, it was a lot of fun. You know him from Just Baseball and many other places. Our good friend, happy to have him here, Mr. Clay Snowden. What's up, pal?
It was great hanging out this weekend. I don't know if my mic was just muted or not, but hey, Evan, Adam, and Ryan in the chat as well. Everybody be active asking questions in the chat. I know that Carlos is looking forward to answering questions on top prospects in the Red system and what they could get in return for Luis Castillo. So make sure to ask plenty of questions and hit the like button. Help these guys out by hitting the like button. It's simple.
Holy moly, who's paying this guy?
I know, man. Clay comes on, he's like, this is my show.
Well, I had to say all that. Nick gave me $50 this weekend to do that.
Absolutely. I definitely appreciate it. Before we get into today's show and kind of talk about everything, because I know obviously the trade deadline's approaching, just want to take a quick second to say, as I mentioned, we were all together this past weekend for the Cardinals series in Cincinnati, and we got to meet a lot of you and talk to a lot of you, and it was really cool. Getting to hang out and get to know everybody and put faces to Twitter accounts and people that are here in the chat every week. So thank you guys for stopping us. Thanks for saying, hey, we had a great time and hopefully we can do it again soon. So let's go ahead and kind of get to the show real quick. Obviously tonight, a nice big W for the Cincinnati Reds in Luis Castillo's potential last start. Luis Castillo goes 7 innings with 8 strikeouts, does give up 3 runs, 2 homers, only has 1 walk. But had a really awesome standing ovation as he was leaving the field by the faithful at GABP. it kind of looks like everyone was expecting. We saw our pal Caleb with the thank you Luis sign in the outfield during the highlight reel. So that was cool. But, you know, this Reds team is kind of playing really well at a time, you know, right now. They've won 10 of their last 15. You know, take 2 out of 3 at the Cardinals. They're up 2 out of 3 right now with 1 more to go against the Marlins before the Orioles come to town, who are a really scrappy baseball team, as Clay can kind of tell us. But really, I mean, you know, Carlos, Nick, really a fun time for the Reds right now with the way they're playing and how things are kind of working out for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Reds are, you know, playing solid baseball right now. I mean, probably not going to last after the trade deadline, but, you know, this was the team that I think we could see at the beginning of the year that we thought could be competitive. It's just, you know, they were kind of dead after the start. It kind of is what it is. But, yeah, it was nice to see, you know, Luis. I mean, he's just pitched, I don't know, I would say probably the last month is probably the best we've ever seen Luis. I mean, I don't know. Is that fair? Is that hyperbole? I mean, he's been about as good as I can remember.
No, man. I mean, he's been absolutely on point the last several starts. Even with today giving up 3 runs, it was like I still felt like this was like a masterpiece. He dominated the hitters. He could do whatever he wanted all night long. That seventh inning, that was special, getting those guys at second and third and getting out of it with no runs. He just wanted to give Cincinnati a reminder on how special he was. It was really fun to watch. It was kind of emotional, you know, kind of got my feelings there a little bit at the end of it, but it was really nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, we have been blessed to watch him pitch for a few years now, and even with the return that he came over for Dan Straley, I mean, it's always been a great joke. I know Nick was retweeting some of the replies to the Reds official account tonight that were clowning that trade back in, I believe, 2017. So it's been a fun time with Luis. I would love to keep him. And I think a lot of people have kind of misunderstood the way that some people like Nick and I have tweeted about trading Luis Castillo. It's not because we necessarily don't want him around. It's more because we understand that the Reds put these limitations on themselves. And so hopefully if the Reds do trade Luis Castillo, the return is awesome and it helps bring winning baseball back to Cincinnati.
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree. That's really funny. I saw those earlier when you guys were putting this out. I was kind of laughing at that. I did want to make mention because I got way into the Luis Castillo talk already and that's on me. Carlos and Nick had a really awesome interview with Reds director of amateur scouting, Joe Katuska, and it's going up tomorrow at 8 o'clock. So you guys can check it out. My daytime job did not let me be a part of it, but this is going to be really cool. Nick and Carlos dived a lot into kind of putting the draft together, what the game plan was, the Reds strategy. So I am excited for you guys to check it out. It's going to be really cool. So tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Carlos and Nick talk with Joe Katuska, director of amateur scouting at the Cincinnati Reds. So make sure you check that out. A lot of good insight, especially if you want to know more about Cam Collier.
Yeah. And for those of you who are watching on YouTube, how are you going to pitch that guy in the salmon shirt there? There's no hole in that swing. Good luck.
No chance. Yeah. Joe was really generous with his time. Really, you know, gave us a lot of good insight. Didn't, you know, we asked some really tough questions and he didn't duck any of them. So, I think you guys will enjoy that interview. It'll be up on everything at 8 o'clock tomorrow. It'll be streaming through Twitter and Facebook and YouTube. And then it'll be right up on the podcast, all the podcast channels as well. And you can watch it on replay whenever. So
that the toughest question might've been the very last one that I came back and asked him.
That was good, but you'll have to wait to find out what that was.
That's what we call in the business a tease. Carlos is getting all about the promo now. He's learning fast.
He's a pro. I'm telling you, I'm not even joking. I was super impressed with Carlos's interview, man. He was just bombing in these questions. It was good stuff.
I'm really not surprised. Carlos is just a huge fan of player development and following prospects. I would imagine he'd be all over this interview and have thousands of questions for Joe.
Well, all right, moving on, guys. Moving on.
Yeah, he's definitely got all his prospects out for the week. So good luck tonight.
What, What's the bigger fandom, Carlos with player development and prospects, or Clay's Jimmy Buffett parrot head side that we found out about this weekend?
Man. That's obvious.
Good luck topping my parrot head fandom.
Clay drove to Cincinnati on Thursday to see Jimmy Buffett and turned right back around and came back to Cincinnati on Saturday from Lexington to go to the Reds game with us. So that's true fandom. Yeah, I totally forgot that Dan Straley was like pitching in the KBO. I remember one time he was like on one of those morning talk shows on ESPN, like what it's like pitching right now in Japan during COVID. Forgot that was a thing there for a bit.
Yeah, I remember. I remember that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, we were listening to like any podcast that was out there. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
I remember during COVID, the Louisville Bats were like streaming old games with like Deion Sanders in them on a Friday night. And I'm like watching on Facebook Live, just loving it.
I would. Yeah, I like I know a lot because the Last Dance was basically all we had at that point. So, yeah, I definitely kind of. And ready to,
of course, after LeBron won, MJ had to.
Yeah. All right.
It's another podcast.
The captain's better than The Last Dance.
I still got more episodes of that to watch, so I will let you know how I feel about it.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Let's kind of get real quick to Jeff Passan. Was talking about some of the stuff here and what the kind of the word is around baseball. So Luis Castillo, as we know, will almost certainly move in the next week, which keep an eye out for our announcement of what we're going to do with the trade deadline. We're figuring that out. Teams hottest after Castillo are the Cardinals, the Mariners, and the Yankees, which we knew about the Yankees for a while. You kind of see there the Twins, the Blue Jays, and the Pods are also in the hunt. I know Carlos would be excited about that.
Executives, one time, baby.
Teams believe Tyler Mahle is also going to be dealt as well. But here's what I found interesting, kind of get your guys' thoughts on this. So the Reds, they said that they're looking for people to work. The Reds will get a better opportunity than ever to dump Moustakas' contract, and they'll pursue it, knowing they could hold on to Castillo and move him this winter. It's kind of interesting that the Reds are kind of like not wanting to eat the contract at times. You see, looking at soaring prospects and kind of just dealing with it. So this is kind of pretty interesting stuff from Passan. Obviously he's, you know, a legend in his field. So
yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. I contend I'd love for them to trade him to the Cardinals. I'd love to hurt their farm system while the Reds aren't competing. I know everyone else probably hates that, but yeah. I also really wonder, you know, Tyler Mahle, I wonder if the qualifying offer, you know, changes the Reds' motivation to trade Mahle. I still think they are, and you know, Passan reported it, I still think they're going to actively try to trade him and at least be shopping him. But I wonder if they're less, they feel less desperate to have to trade him if they're not getting the exact offer that they want back, knowing, hey, you know, worst case scenario, we can hold on to this guy and essentially get another Jay Allen or Sal Stewart, I guess, you know, would be that level. So, yeah. And then, I mean, obviously no one wants the Reds to be dumping Mike Moustakas and diluting a trade. But again, let's see. Caution, Reds fans. If you see Mike Moustakas' name get in there, wait to see how much money is involved. Like, I would be all for if someone will take like $2 million of Moustakas, which is like nothing. That's registering a lot of money. I would love for the Reds just to be able to move on, get some other guys some playing time, and just not really, you know, not really have a wasted roster spot right now. But
yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this report, and the Cardinals are very interesting to me as well, Nick. The biggest issue there is like, who are they willing to give up? And Mason Winn is a name that a lot of people have been throwing around in trades. Two-way player, actually, shortstop pitcher. But they're also in the Soto trade talks. And I think that they are the best landing spot for Soto. I wonder if that's going to play a factor into this, although I personally don't think Soto will get traded at this deadline. Tyler Mahle, Luis Castillo, I could both see them being dealt. I personally think it's the right move to deal both of them. About the Moustakas thing, I totally agree with Nick. All because you're throwing him in does not mean that you're completely tanking the package in return. It all has to do with how much money the Reds are willing to pay of Moustakas' contract. At this point, I mean, he is legitimately playing at a level of a DFA type player. If you can convince somebody to take him on, that would be incredible. As long as the caveat there is, it doesn't completely tank the return.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, especially like you're looking at teams like Atlanta right now who are playing, you know, Robinson Cano while they're waiting for Ozzy Albies to come back. And, you know, Mike Moustakas is probably playing. Clay, you can probably speak to this better than I can for sure. Playing pretty close to the level Robinson Cano has been playing at the past year or so. So,
yeah, Robinson Cano's about as bad as it gets right now. And that's why he continues to bounce around. Teams are convincing themselves that there's still power in that bat, and there just simply isn't.
Well, I know Nick kind of has this here, kind of talking about all the teams rumored to show interest. Clay, in your eyes, you know, knowing how well and knowledgeable you are about prospects and things like that, you know, which of these organizations really give the Reds the best opportunity to kind of stack up on guys, potentially kind of build the farm system and maybe get some guys who can be major leaguers for them?
Yeah, and I'll go through kind of a process of elimination. And those of you who are listening on Spotify, the teams listed are Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, Cardinals, Padres, Mariners, Twins, Mets, Blue Jays. I'll go ahead and scratch off the Mets. I think that the Twins are interesting. I think they're closer to O'Malley than Castillo return, just where their prospect system ranks right now. They don't have a ton in their farm. Austin Martin's really not it, and he's one of their top prospects. The Cardinals do have enough to get that deal done. I still wonder if, you know, I know that we've all kind of moved past the trading in the division thing, especially with playing less division games against the Cardinals going forward, but I wonder if the front office still feels that way or not. The Astros are interesting enough. I don't like their prospect system at all. You could get like a Pedro Leon, who's a center fielder, who's 23 years old. He's interesting. He's outside of the top 100. They have a couple of arms you could throw in there, but in reality, like, I would not want to trade Luis Castillo to the Astros simply because of the return. Blue Jays are in a similar boat. Mariners, we've already dealt with them. They have prospects that would be very attractive in return. I don't want Emerson Hancock. I know that's a name that continues to be thrown around. And for those of you on Twitter who see Mariners accounts, every single trade includes Emerson Hancock. There's a reason why, because they don't want him. They know that he's trending towards a reliever instead of a starter, and they don't think his ceiling's high. That's why they're throwing him in every single trade. Padres, I wouldn't do that simply because it would make Carlos too happy. Dodgers, I mean, if there's a team that's going to do it, it just load up, it's the Dodgers. And I talked about this on Just Baseball State of the Division. The Dodgers don't function like other teams. We need to remove our fandom hat and put ourselves in the Dodgers fan. If they have a starting pitcher go down, they don't go out and get Chad Kuhl to eat innings the rest of the year. They say, screw it, we'll go out and get a Luis Castillo. So I do see them as a strong possibility. And then the Yankees are the team that's always been rumored. It kind of seems like the perfect fit. This is, you know, the Yankees is the girl at junior prom that you wanted to go with, but instead she went with Carlos, and now it's senior prom. You get another chance. Carlos has put on 10 pounds. She's kind of moved on from Carlos.
Oh, muscle.
It's time to reunite with that girl. I think the Yankees would be the favorite to land him. I think the Dodgers are close to, maybe Seattle at 3, Blue Jays at 4, something like that is how I would rank it.
So I think I would at least want him to go least to the Yankees and then St. Louis. Like, I'd rather him go to St. Louis rather than the Yankees.
I just wonder how much – I think the Soto trade happens in the offseason because it is so freaking complicated to pull off a trade that big.
Yeah, and everybody's been like, whoa, he's available? We need more time than just 3 weeks to give you a package.
Exactly. And just in terms of roster construction going forward, 40-man spots. I mean, there's a lot to be considered when trading
potentially six top prospects for someone like Soto. But if he were to be moved, a lot of these teams on that list are interested in that. And there goes their prospect capital and takes Luis Castillo out of the running.
Yeah. So Nick just posted this from our friends at Bet Online as far as, or maybe not by his reaction of his face. We'll just go with it and say it's on there. Check out Bet Online and get some money. Luis Castillo's next team odds. The Yankees are the favorites at plus 300. Blue Jays 350, Dodgers 400. Cardinals and Giants at 500, Twins at 600, Braves at 700, Mets at 900. So pretty interesting there. I'm guessing that if there's a Twins deal, there's no chance that Nick Gordon comes to Cincinnati. I'm guessing that's off the books.
He would be the last piece in the trade deal, and it wouldn't move the needle at all. Not a very good player. One player I do like is Spencer Steer from Minnesota. I like their players. It would involve Alex Kirilloff, Jose Miranda, or Trevor Larnick. And all of them kind of have flaws. All of them are super young. They fill positions of needs for the Reds. It would make sense. I'm just wondering if there's reluctancy from the Twins to trade from the major league roster in a year that, I mean, I know they're in first place, but that division sucks, and that team is not exactly deep enough. They need more than one arm. You can't give up two or three players on your roster and add one arm and still need two more.
It feels like it's going to – I mean, I don't have anything. Just the hunch I have is it feels like it's going to be the Yankees.
The Mariners, holy F. I'm going to wear, Mariners stuff the rest of the season.
I almost wore my Mariners quarter zip for you today, but I figured that would be a little bit inappropriate.
It would not have been.
Yeah, I definitely feel like the Yankees are heavy, heavy favorites in this. Unless they go out and get another starter, unless there's someone else that comes out on the market. I know Lopez from the Marlins was just rumored to be on the market. I don't know, maybe that, good. but it Castillo just feels like the perfect fit for the Yankees. The only other thing I would add on the Astros is, the Astros could look at trading major league talent, especially if maybe they're making some other deals, to fill some other gaps. That's the only way I see the Astros being able to pull off a deal for Castillo is if they're trading some sort of major league talent. Maybe they're trading one of their other starting pitchers that they like but don't love for this year. That's the only way I see it working.
Yeah, so what they, Nick's they saying don't is have a lot of
young talent that I mean, Jeremy Pena is a star. They're not going to trade him. I just don't really know how much young talent their center fielders are young, but none of them move the needle.
I'm thinking like a Javier,
a Christian Javier. Yeah.
Where they're giving up. It sounds weird to give up a starting pitcher, but you're just upgrading your starting pitcher. And then the Reds are getting back a starting pitcher with a lot more control. That's the only way I see it is if they did like Javier, and then maybe they did, I don't know, something like, I don't know,
Forrest Whitley
or who's their backup center fielder, or McCormick,
Jake Myers, Jose Siri,
Jim Edmonds.
What about Jake this McCormick? Yordan Alvarez guy? Do you think the Reds could get him? I hear he's pretty decent.
He had an absolute tank today in Oakland.
Yeah, I have him in my Dynasty League. He's so fun. I'm such a big fan. But yeah, I think I kind of go to Nick's point. I definitely really feel like with the case of the Yankees are probably the heavy favorites. Pablo Lopez, who I just saw pitch in person last night, I was blown away. How good he was in person. Really impressed.
Yeah, like Joey just said, if the Cardinals get Soto and Castillo,
there's no
we're
way.
Done.
There's no
that's
way.
That would be a lot. I mean, they wouldn't
we're
have.
Done. A farm we're shutting. We're first. Shutting the show down for the year. We're just gonna.
So are the Cardinals. They're gonna have no farm system ever.
Yeah, no farm system. Like they probably can't play with 26 at that point because of their salary.
They'll make new rules. They'll be able to have them. Don't worry about that.
Pujols and Yachty will be back next year on league minimum contracts just to fill roster spots.
What a nightmare situation. Thanks, Joey.
What about Tyler Mahle? Because I know we're going to get to this in a little bit as far as like the guys that we kind of feel will be traded. And, you know, Poisson had in that report, he kind of felt like a lot of the league expects he'll be traded. I didn't say that he would be traded because I was playing it really conservative. I'm not very good at the prediction game, as you see here. As I think you all know, Carlos didn't have Mahle either. So just Clay and Nick did. So you guys are in the idea that you do believe he'll be traded. What does a package for him look like? Because obviously he's not, I don't know. Is it, I wouldn't say it's similar to Castillo by any means, but it's got to be pretty decent, right?
I don't think it's much less. I mean, it's less, but I don't think it's, I mean, I think you're looking for a top 100 prospect for him plus something else. So yeah, I mean, it's certainly not a bargain deal. That's for sure.
Yeah, and it all just depends on.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. With Mahle, my main concern is he. Over the past 3 years, he's just proven he cannot pitch at home. I don't know why. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. I just am worried about giving money and long term deals to someone who struggles in their own ballpark. It kind of sucks. It would be like, you know, a player who can't hit in a ballpark. Would you want to re-sign him there for money? It's just because I do think he's a really good pitcher. I do think the return for that will be good. It's similar to Castillo. He's a little bit younger, still has a year left of control. And the starting pitching market this season at the deadline is weak. There's a lot of Chad Cools, Jose Quintana type inning eaters round out the end of your rotation. There's not a lot of guys with the upside Mahle brings and the production. He's a solid number three right now in a lot of rotations. Top 100 prospect, I could see them go that route and then lesser secondaries probably. I could also see them going a route where they get a few players who are high upside. And before everyone jumps to, and I know Noah uses as a parameter, just saying top five in a system, each system's different. If you look at the Guardians, they have eight top 100 players. If you got their eighth best prospect, you're pretty excited. If you got the A's eighth best prospect, you would be doing terrible.
Is that Kyler Murray?
No, it is not, believe it or not.
Okay. I thought it might be with how their farm system was.
He'd be in their top 10. So yeah, I do think Mahle gets moved simply because of his inability to pitch at home. And I just don't see them tying money up in a guy that struggled there. And I hate to say that because I love watching him pitch and I really wish that they could keep him. It just doesn't seem likely.
So who's like a big, like, okay, San Diego. Is San Diego a good fit for Tyler Mahle because of the size of their ballpark, showing the inability to struggle at times in small parks? Maybe, you know, I don't think they're getting CJ Abrams by any means in a Tyler Mahle deal, but is that a fit for him for a team that's a postseason contender, getting healthy and having him and guys like Musgrove in a short series? Is that like a good fit in your eyes?
I don't think so. Okay. They have the Joe Musgrove deal coming up after the year that they're going to be pumping a ton of money into. Mackenzie Gore is kind of a young guy. He's injured. But they have enough right now with Clevinger and Martinez can at least pitch some innings. I see them more on the inning eaters type of trade market instead of Tyler Mahle. Now, one team that I actually talked to Ryan Finkelstein, Locked On Mets and Just Baseball's editor about that he brought up, I had not thought about, is the Rays. Doesn't Mahle just seem like the type of guy that goes to the Rays and they figure out whatever it is with him because he shows the talent. He just needs something to be figured out. And next thing you know, Tyler Mahle's leading the Rays. Now, that is an interesting team to look into because they have a good prospect system and players at the MLB level that you could target, including Josh Lowe, who's a center fielder, something that, you know, the Reds could use.
All right, cool. Wander Franco coming to the Reds.
Yeah.
Tyler Mahle. Love it. Sign me up.
I like the concept of the Rays. I could totally see him, like, you know, winning the Cy Young next year with the Rays. I just wonder if he'd be too expensive for them next year because he's probably going to be pushing $10 million next year.
Well, Nick, are the Guardians a possibility because of their prospect system? And, you know, they have Quantrill, they have Shane Bieber.
Yeah, I think Mahle would I went on a Guardians podcast and I was actually kind of saying I think Mahle makes more sense than Castillo. I think Mahle makes sense for just about any team except maybe like the Yankees and Dodgers. I mean, I think anyone could use him. San Diego, like Clay said, again, I think he might be you know, too expensive for them next year, because they're, you know, their budget's, you know, pretty well maxed out, I believe. So I think like they're looking for like the Brandon Drury's. They're looking for the budget players, you know, at this point to kind of add. So
yeah, we all had Drury on our list, so I do want to touch on him. But Nick and Carlos, I want to get your guys' thoughts on this real quick before we get to some questions we had from the chat. You both listed Tyler Naquin as a guy you think will get traded for the deadline. And obviously, you know, the reasons of left-handed bat, you know, has shown promise, has been really good for the Reds into what his role is supposed to be, really, the two seasons he's been here. But is this a situation with him where, like, Carlos and I have had this conversation about Drury, where, you know, is Drury going to be in a better situation than he has with the Reds? Like, is this something where he's going to make, you know, next year the Reds can sign for maybe $3 million and they're comfortable and he's comfortable? Like, is that kind of similar for Naquin? Like, we've talked throughout the season about, like, if it were up to us, we would give Naquin and Drury extensions at least for another year. So you guys both had him listed. What was kind of your thought process there?
I just think he's, like, he's too good of, like, a streaky hitter. And that's what teams want to take a chance on. Like, you're not going to get a good return for him, in my opinion. I think you're going to get, I don't know, maybe a big league reliever. I don't know. I just don't think you're going to get the return that you're thinking of. And I mean, might as well just take the chance on that if you're the Reds, because he's not going to stay here beyond this. So go out there and get what you can for him. I think teams would want him the way that he hits right-handed pitching, and he's a good solid outfielder. And like I said, he gets streaky. If he gets streaky, like in a playoff series, that guy could end up being like an MVP of a, you know, of a pennant leagued in, you know, team. That's how streaky he can get.
Yeah, I put Naquin on here more just because I think the Reds are going to want to trade one outfielder, because they have like guys like Jake Fraley and Aristides Aquino that they're probably going to want to play in the second half. So I think one of Pham or Naquin gets traded. I think I went to Naquin because Naquin's cheaper than Pham and less baggage.
I'd say more likable.
So I don't think the Reds will get anything for Naquin, though. I mean, I think he's like when the Reds traded Scooter Gennett, like he might be like some cash, because he's making $4 million this year. So that's like what, $1.5 million for 2 months. So I don't think you're going to get much for him, but I think it makes sense to move him or Pham, at least one of them, just so you can get some of these other guys, you know, some at bats in the second half that you have, you know, control of long term. And Brandon Drury, I've said it before, you can trade him and try to re-sign him again in the offseason, especially if he goes somewhere and struggles.
On Naquin, these type of profiles are available every single year at the deadline, fourth outfielders. And as I was writing all of the deadline previews, I just realized it's going to become a game of musical chairs. How many David Peraltas and Jordan Luplos and Tyler Naquins are needed on contenders? There's a lot more available than needed. So it really comes down to, okay, is Tyler Naquin going to get moved as opposed to one of those other ones? He struggled a lot with injuries throughout his career. I wonder if a team would rather just say, okay, I'm going to get David Peralta. I'm going to get, you know, the whole list of other players who fit a similar profile instead of Naquin. Either way, I do agree with what Nick was saying. Like, Jake Fraley needs at-bats. I have no idea who Aquino is. I've never heard that name in my life, but I hope he doesn't get any at-bats with the Reds in the second half. I don't want to hear his stats against lefties. I don't want to hear it. I'm done with that guy.
Wait till you see the rehab.
I missed that. Jake Fraley needs at-bats?
I would rather see Jake Fraley at-bats than Aquino at-bats.
Who is this Jake Fraley? Does he play for the Reds? I feel like he doesn't exist anymore.
I'd rather see neither.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, but I would rather there be an upgrade.
You have control of Jake Fraley for 4 years.
Cool.
You know, for nothing. I mean, you know, like, this is the year you want to see these guys play, you know, see what they've got.
Aquino, we've seen enough of Jake Fraley.
Aquino has
I promise you, we've seen enough of Jake Fraley.
Aquino only has like, he has a pretty good, you know, he has a good arm and he has some power. Everything else is pretty suspect. At least Fraley has a couple of things he's shown at times. I'm not saying he's going to be anything more than a fourth outfielder, but with the control, I don't know. I'd rather see Fraley at this point.
I think you'll see both.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure we will this year.
Do you think Naquin's going to end up on like Nick said with like the Scooter Jeanette trade? Do you think he's going to end up on some like goofy team like?
It's going to be the White Sox.
Yeah, it's going to be like the White Sox or like Baltimore because they're 2.5 out of the wild card and they're going to like try to like beef up and get their fourth outfielder to go with like Santander.
Baltimore's 2.5 out of the wild card?
Yeah.
He legit makes sense for the White Sox. Like, he really does.
I mean, Carlos was saying he's kind of got like that Eddie Rosario vibe. He's a better player than Eddie Rosario was at the deadline last year. You know, and he's like, that's the exact time. I could absolutely see him, you know, getting hot in the playoffs and helping a team like Rosario did for the Braves. I mean, so, but yeah, I don't think the Reds are going to get anything for him. Just like
whatever the Guardians can do to help Tony La Russa win a World Series. whatever you need, Tony.
Yeah. All right. So I know, well, this would be kind of something that's going to be a hot button for the next week. And I'm sure we'll keep, you know, we'll probably keep doing stuff as it goes on. But we actually got a ton of questions from the chat that we want to get to. Before we kind of go into everything else. So this one's from Adam, please don't kill me if I get your last name wrong. Adam Godemuller. Is the Reds bullpen half decent or just a hot streak?
It's a hot streak. Next question.
Yeah. I would say it's more of just, you know, return to the norm. Like, you know, they were so bad. Like
the norm? What do you mean the norm?
The norm of bad, like they were, like there was there was guys that had like 9 and 10 ERAs. Like they're not, none of them are that bad. They're bad, but they're not that bad. So, I mean, I think some of it's just evening out.
I just found the next clip thing that Nick's gonna clip of Carlos, or his next GIF of Carlos's face just going.
I don't think Reaver San Martin's gonna have a 9 ERA as a reliever forever. I mean, you know, like he.
God, you hope not.
Clay, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that there's a couple players who are good in this bullpen. I don't think that they're great. I mean, Alexis Diaz is a good player. And I think San Martin has shown a little bit since the move to the bullpen to actually believe he could factor into next year's bullpen. But I'm kind of siding with Carlos here. I think it's more of a hot streak. And this is what bullpens are. When you're pitching one inning at a time, everything's going to fluctuate back and forth. If you look at a player's ERA in the bullpen, it doesn't really mean much. Carlos was a great bullpen pitcher. His ERA didn't reflect that, though. That's nothing he could have done about that. It's not always about a bullpen ERA.
All right, this one's from Jackson Hall. Do you think the Brewers or Cardinals will make a bigger splash in trades or neither? I think I might have said this to you guys over the weekend where I understand they have Goldschmidt and Arenado. And I know they're like, what, 4 or 5 games over 500. I'm not really blown away by the Cardinals. I mean, I know they have a winning record. I know they're in the playoff hunt, but like, they didn't really impress me this week at all.
That's the thing. So I think they're going to be blown away by them. They're going to get in because there's an extra playoff team in and they're
right.
Slightly better than average. So they're going to get in.
Yeah. I
think they'll spend more money than the Brewers at the trade deadline to make that happen.
I think the Brewers are probably at their close to their max spending.
Yeah.
The Brewers, if you look at their spending, this is the most I think they've spent in like ever. I think this is their highest payroll. I could be wrong, but they're not much higher than this ever. So I think the Cardinals probably have more wiggle room with ownership. But I don't know, both of the Brewers though, I look at that team and I go, I don't know how long that window is. So if I was them, I feel like I'd be trying to be aggressive and capitalizing on what you got now. Because those pitchers are going to start getting really expensive. And unless their ownership changes course completely, because they typically spend less than the Reds, I don't. And they got Yelich for a long time, and that deal is not going to age well, in my opinion. So
not aging well already.
Yeah. But I mean, the Cardinals, too. I mean, they got Goldschmidt and Arenado. I mean, they only got Goldschmidt for next year. Arenado, I mean, he's got like 2 or 3, but both those players, I don't know how much longer they're going to be at the level they're at. So I think both of those teams should be aggressive.
Yeah, I was writing the Brewers trade deadline, and I hated it just because I hate the way that this team's constructed and the lack of flexibility that they have. Really, all that I could think that they could do was add Michael A. Taylor to the center field. Not a very exciting addition. He just kind of fits what they do and what they need. They desperately need a center fielder, and they need an additional bat on top of that, someone who can actually impact the baseball. I just don't see them doing it, though, for the same reasons that Nick said. The Cardinals have a better prospect system and young players in the MLB that could be traded, so I would go with the Cardinals.
Can Hunter Renfroe play center field?
Not well.
I mean, I was thinking, like, could they use, like, a Tyler Naquin? And, you know, I mean, Naquin could play center field, but that's a pretty big ballpark for a bad
right
center
now,
fielder.
Yeah, I mean, they have Tyrone Taylor and Jonathan Davis playing center field since Lorenzen Cain got cut. The team is just, they need someone who's a legit center fielder and preferably someone who's a plus defender. There's just not much of that out on the trade market right now. They're not going to get a Ramon Laureano. There'll be too much of a bidding war for him, even though I don't think he's anything incredible. There's that,
Billy
Hamilton's what the market
available.
I was about to say, do you think they'll go after Billy Hamilton because he's doing nothing in Miami but running bases and that big ballpark to play like a defensive replacement?
No.
Isn't Billy Hamilton just Lorenzo Cain?
Yeah, he is, but way cheaper at this point.
Lorenzo Cain.
They're paying Lorenzo. They're still paying Lorenzo.
Yeah. I mean, and we just saw this weekend, Billy Hamilton can play second base still. So, you know, there's that.
I think Michael A. Taylor will be, or a player of that caliber, fans will not be extremely excited about it. And once again, they're going to the playoffs with a lineup that is not good enough to compete in October.
Yeah, they got two guys that you can probably that you worry about. But I say that, of course, Andrew Kisner will hit like 700 in the first round. And
Tim, don't mention people by name. Please quit mentioning people by their names.
If he gets Andrew Kitzner hot, then
I got some sort of touch.
Well, would you be surprised, Nick?
That would be surprising. Like, at least Rowdy Tellez, I could see some potential there. And I mean, Freddie Freeman's Freddie Freeman, but he gets Andrew Kitzner.
Yeah, that would never shirt aside.
You just underestimated the power of Tim, the Spider-Man Daniel.
So Zachary Ertl. Have we not been continuously rebuilding aside from the COVID year?
My point to this, and I said this on a podcast last night, and I hope the Reds can get to a point, because I think trading Jesse Winker in the offseason was the right move. You hate me for it. I hope the Reds get to a point where they can make a move like that and it doesn't tank their season. And they've got to trade Luis Castillo now, and they've got to keep their farm system stocked and not be in the bottom half of the farm system rankings most years to make that kind of deal and not tank your season. So that would be my only comment on that.
All I want to say about that is a side note on prospect rankings. Right now, they're going to be changing a ton. And someone's going to say the Reds are not a good system. There's multiple things happening. A lot of rookies are graduating. So you have, you know, Reds players who are graduating from the prospect status. You have other teams graduating. So there's going to be fluctuation. And then they're going to be, you know, the draft classes are coming in. And most overrank the draft class. I don't know if you remember when Austin Hendrick came in, he was ranked extremely high right away. They always rank the first round picks and even second round picks pretty damn high for whatever reason. So I wouldn't read too much into the state of the prospect rankings right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But, you know, I'm also trying to talk myself out of being overtly excited about Cam Collier because everything I'm reading makes it sound like they just got, you know, the future of the corner of the infield for eternity.
I think they did, I believe.
So KyleRx or else. It's a pretty fascinating YouTube ID there, my friend. There's not enough talent in the organization as a whole, so what's the point of extending Castillo? They're well under 500 with him here and an underwhelming minor league system.
I just don't think you should extend a guy that's on the wrong side of 30 that's a pitcher. I don't think it really has anything to do with as much where they're at. I think they should have, like, if they were going to extend.
How many years would you be okay with them extending him?
I think they should have tried to extend Luis Castillo back in like 2020. And where they're buying up his last couple years of arbitration are only going a few years into his 30s, as opposed to a contract that starts at 31 years old that's going to 37 or 38. I just think that's too much risk for the way the Reds spend. I would think it's too much risk for even like the Cardinals. I don't think it would be a good long-term move.
But that's not my question. Like, how many years would you be willing to give him?
If he wants a 3-year deal, sure, sign me up. I mean, I'd be all for that.
Is 5 too many?
He's going to capitalize on the season that he's having this offseason and get a deal that takes him near 40 years old. That's what they all do. That's what all of the agents will push for. You never see a pitcher of his caliber at 30 years old take a 3-year deal because they have the opportunity to take 7-8-year deals or whatever it is. I would be shocked if he signs anything under a 5-year deal.
Can I point out real quick too? I just want to kind of make sure of this. Underwhelming minor league system. I understand the past. Sure. I mean, like there's like Bob, Steve, Nick Travieso drafts. Absolutely. But like, if you look at this like major league roster right now, so Green, Lodolo, Ashcraft all came up through the Red system. Tyler Stevenson came up through the Red system. Jonathan Indy came up through the Red system. Nick Senzel, you can say it took him a long time to get to be a productive major league player, and he had to get knocked down the like in the order, but he's been a productive major league player. Came up in the Red system. So like, you know, and Clay, you guys can speak this better than I can. I don't know if a ton of teams, and yes, they're rebuilding, and yes, they're kind of going through their transition, these peaks and valleys that everyone mocks. But I don't know how many guys have 6 homegrown guys in their everyday, you know, in their top of the rotation and their everyday lineup at this point. So
I think the more that can be kind of tricky, man, because look where they are. It's not like these guys are making major impacts. We can see, like, hopefully we want them to be better.
Sure, sure. I understand
all of them
that.
Are just right now. They're like, Reds fans are viewing them as like, oh, here's the next answer. Here's the next answer. Tyler Stevenson, he should be the middle of the pack bat, but no, he's not. Tyler Stevenson's a great catcher. He's a great hitting catcher. He's not a great middle of the infield or middle of the lineup type of bat. Like Jonathan India, he has to have so many things going right for him. He has to stay healthy. These pitchers, like you got to be careful talking about how many prospects they have coming up with the Reds and like how they view them, because every team has that.
That's fair.
And we're just looking at them for hope. But I mean, they got to make moves, man. You can't just rely on what's coming up through the minor league system, because nobody wins with just the minor league system.
Yeah, and I understand that. And that's not, I mean, you know, I certainly understand what you're saying. I just was kind of saying, like, I don't know how many people how many teams have drafted this high and have 6 of their own first round picks actually like there. And yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously, you know, where they're at is definitely disappointing, but I think a lot of that was decisions they made outside of the draft as well.
Yeah. One other quick point about Castillo in the years. So this last offseason, Gausman, Ray, and Rodriguez all got 5-year deals, and none of those 3 pitchers have nearly the track record of Castillo. They both had Gausman, and all 3 of those guys had really good 2021 seasons, but they didn't have like 4 good seasons back to back to back. So, I mean, I think you're probably talking like 6 or 7. They're all around the same age range too. So that would be something to add to that.
That's kind of what I'm asking. Would you be okay if the Reds extended Castillo for 5 years? Nick?
Probably not. I mean, I would say like 4 or less. Again, I don't think he's going to want 5 years.
He's going to get
$25 million would you do it for 5 years?
5 for $25 million? What is that? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. I just don't.
I think he projects better than what like Johnny Cueto did after the Reds traded him. I think he's going to be a better pitcher the second half of his career. Even like Johnny's been great. He's been a very solid pitcher. I think Castillo is going to project better than that. Cause I think he works at it a little bit harder than Johnny. Like Johnny probably was a little bit more talented, but I think Castillo works at it. He keeps his body in shape longer. I think he's going to age better.
He has less innings too than I think Cueto had when he hit free agent. So no, I mean, I agree with that. Sure, 525. Maybe you could talk me into that. I don't think that's
how many teams.
I think it's more like 200. Well, it's more like 700. How many teams
that have finished under 500 recently have signed a pitcher on their own team to an extension of 5 years over 25 million? It just doesn't happen.
Reds Homer Bailey.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I don't want to comment too much. I know that's Carlos's buddy, but
yeah, watch him.
Yeah, I supported the Bailey side.
It doesn't happen. I did often. Too. And what happens if?
And I was wrong.
He says, and you have to put yourself in his shoes too. What makes everyone thinks he immediately wants to sign an extension right now? Why would his agent? And this is who does a lot of the deals: is the agent. It's not them communicating with Luis Castillo solely. The agent probably is going to say test free agency after next season.
Yeah.
Okay, so you want to just keep him around for next year. There's no reason for him to sign this extension unless the money is really good, because a lot of teams will outbid the Reds once he does reach free agency. It has more to do with his agent probably telling him not to sign an extension, even if the Reds wanted him to, because he's going to make more money on the open market than he would signing with the Reds.
Especially this close to free agency. A couple years ago, maybe it's a different story because there's still a long, and the agent's going to weigh in all that kind of stuff. Like, there's a lot of risk, you know, staying healthy and productive for 4 more years as opposed to another year and a half. Like, honestly, even if Castillo got hurt next year, he's still going to get a good contract, right? Because he's pitched long enough and has enough of a tracker. Trevor Story.
Syndergaard didn't pitch at all last year, or like hardly at all. Yeah. He got $20 million. Syndergaard, who has been injured for like 2 straight years. That's how expensive. Jordan Lyles got $7 million to pitch for the Orioles this year. Starting pitching is extremely expensive.
And Trevor Story would be a good cautionary tale on thinking you can extend a guy and then you get to free agency and you get outbid. Yeah. You know, they got nothing for him. So that's there's risk in keeping him, even if you thought you could extend him. So,
yeah, good talk. Like it. Do you have any more you want to get to the inevitable doom debate?
I know that there were some trade proposals put up there.
Just too many too many comments, guys. I can't read through all.
That's right. Good. Keep them rolling in.
Yeah, it's great.
Clay,
I like this one.
Yeah, Clay. What is Daniel
Bellaheen? He's a catcher who just got moved up to Double A. Veloheen's. I'm pretty sure how you say his name.
Hit 2 home runs tonight, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. He had 2 home runs tonight. He was a guy I kind of caught on to last year and started watching and thought, okay, this is definitely a player to keep an eye on. He has a really sweet swing from the left side with power. I haven't seen too much of him. Like, I don't watch catcher defense when I watch. You know, I'm not typically looking for the catchers. I'm usually watching the pitchers whenever I watch games. But I know he's got a cannon. I've seen him throw out some players. So I actually do think, in terms of his ceiling, he kind of reminds me of a guy who was in the system a couple years ago. And I just blanked on his name, went to the Giants. Oh my gosh. Bottom line, I think he's going to be a legitimate backup catcher. I don't personally see him having the ceiling as someone who can, you know, move Tyler Stevenson to first and put this guy in a catcher. I don't see that being the case, but backup catchers are really expensive too. Good backup catchers are expensive. If this guy can pan out, it would be great, especially because the Reds have just invested so much in the catching position in the top 3 rounds of the draft, and none of them have really panned out, besides Tyler Stevenson.
Nice to see a catcher with power. He went 1-for-11 when I saw him, the series I saw him, so I wasn't too impressed.
When was the last time the Reds saw a catcher with power?
Devin Mesoraco.
friend of the program, Devin Mesoraco. Yeah.
Tucker Barnhart.
Don't you mock him.
Deonner Navarro.
And his 241 slugging percentage.
I hope that this isn't too mean to say on here, but I did see somebody tweet that they like took their kid to Comerica in Detroit because he was such a big Tucker Barnhart fan from Cincinnati to go. And I was just sitting there like, oh man, I hope they know that like Tucker's not really playing much anymore and he's been terrible. And the kid was so excited to be at Comerica to see Tucker. And at least he's a good guy.
Ooh.
Can Alex I go Wallace. Ahead and run with this?
Yeah, it'll be over.
Yeah, why don't you go on the house and tell us what you and Nick and we're doing in the bathroom?
Whoa!
I will explain that actually.
Trying to keep it PG around here now, guys.
Do you want me to read the question?
Go for it.
Yeah,
okay. It's your show. What am I?
It's much. Well, you said you were going to read the question. There's a silence. So.
I'm
Alex
car,
Wallace remember? Asked, "What was Clay's new uniform set idea?" So I have this theory that whenever teams are due for new uniforms, it's usually at the time that the team has had that uniform for several years and it's kind of looks outdated now and they've been bad. They're going to keep that uniform until the upswing years. We saw the Padres do this when they switched their uniforms. I know that a lot of teams do it in the NBA. Golden State switched theirs around the same time. Cleveland did as well, a little bit late for Cleveland. It's just kind of a theme that starts when you see a team, you want to generate more interest in that team because they're starting to swing towards being good. It's a perfect time if they want to do it 2024, 2025, if they have their top prospects up, if interest is down after a few years of being bad, why not break out some new uniforms? I don't really know what they look like. There's some discussion on that. I don't really care. I'm done with the ones that they currently wear. I'm just sick of them. Bring a new breath of fresh air. The Bengals did it, didn't they? I mean,
yeah.
There's example after example of this happening. So I'm going on record today, July 27th at 10:23 p.m., 2024 new Reds uniforms, and we will all have strong opinions on them.
As long as they're not cutoffs, I'm cool with it.
Bring on the cutoffs, baby.
Oh, my God. Those are the
no, worst. I'm joking. I don't want cutoffs either.
I think the Reds should have like 6,000 different uniforms, just wear different uniforms all the
Why
time.
Why did they wear so many that one year? Like, what was it, 3 years ago?
They had 150th anniversary. Yeah, they were doing like the...
Should always do that. Just
yeah, I love
why
that.
Why not just do it all the time?
Yeah, I don't understand. It was so, like, who doesn't love that?
So
unless you're like... a prominent like playoff team, like we're in the playoffs every year. We want like people in like the Braves that or the Cup, like something like that. Like, okay, well, you're the Reds, you haven't been prominent for 30 years, so just go ahead and wear everything.
Yeah. So we are Penn State Reds does make a great point. And this is true. I learned this a few years ago when I was working in sports retail. So if a new jersey is happening, it's already in development. For Nike, it takes, you know, 3 or 4 years for them to get the product out. So,
well, Nike's not making these jerseys. It's still majestic. Nike's putting their symbol on them.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're Oregon, Oregon gets New Jersey like every Tuesday. So yeah, they're kind of the only ones, but yeah, I'm with Clay. I'm ready for new unis. It's long overdue. I'm very bored with what they have right now. And, you know, we said it all weekend. You know, bring back the pullovers. We all love them. All right, Ian Harold, we got to do it because it's asked every week. What to do with Tyler Stevenson, keep him behind the dish or possibly transition to first base DH? Good idea to maybe target a top catching prospect. Castillo to Toronto from Moreno, return in smaller package. All right. I know we're going to be asked this every week, so I'm just going to say the same thing every week. The Reds are better with Tyler Stevenson as a catcher. If he wants to keep playing catcher, they should keep letting him play catcher. I understand that he has gotten some injuries, but it's not recurring like, oh, I tore my ACL again or this. It's like, I got a concussion. I broke my collarbone on a freak accident. It's not like it's like, you know, the same thing over and over again where it's like, okay, this is concerned. Like when Buster Posey moved to first base was because like he was having that leg issue from when he had that freak play at the plate. Joe Mauer just kind of got to the point where he was having the same injuries over and over again. I was like, okay, to be safe here. The Reds are so much better Tyler Stevenson than a catcher. I understand the window of Joey Votto's contract expiring. They need to have a backup plan at first base. we've talked about this a million times. I'm totally okay if Tyler Stevenson plays first base a day or so a week. I'm totally okay if he DHs a day or so a week, as long as he's in the lineup. But they are better with him behind the plate. The pitching is better with him behind the plate. The lineup is better with him behind the plate.
Yeah, it's just so easy right now, like a decision to make. You know, it's been freak injuries. The only thing that like kind of would make me pause is the concussions, but they don't seem to worry him or any of the camp around him. The other injuries have been freakish. But like, give him another year because he wants to be a catcher. The organization wants him to be a catcher. If he's going to make money, he's going to be a catcher. And if he gets hurt all next year, then guess what? He's still going to be with the Reds in the big leagues. Joey will probably not be there. And if he does, he's going to sign to be like a DH that next year for the 24 year. So go ahead and let him, you know, this year, it's a wash. It sucks. He got hurt the majority of the time, freakish accidents. Next year, he comes back and try to do it again. If he stays healthy, then, oh my gosh, the Reds have a leg up on the majority of the teams in the National League. If it doesn't, then they can figure out what they want to go from there. But he definitely deserves another year of seeing what's going on and the way that the Reds have everything planned with Joey being in his last year next year. It seems to be able to work itself out.
Ditto. I've exhausted this. I have nothing else to add except for if you really are going to move him off catcher, trade him this offseason as a catcher and someone else will gladly take him. Clay, the floor is yours.
I have nothing to add as well. Keep him at catcher. I don't see anyone in any other sport changing players' positions just because of injuries. Like, that's just not a thing. But in baseball, that apparently is a thing. Keep him where he's most valuable, which is catcher.
Yeah. So Ian asked if the fact that he's, you know, too many guys are 6'4 behind the dish, is his size making him too big of a magnet for these accidents? Ian, I really appreciate the concepts and the questions here, but this may potentially be a thing where we're looking a little too much into it. I think things just happened. I totally get the concern because he has been a really special talent for them. That, you know, what we saw in this season, right, kind of seeing him kind of break out when he was on the field. But, you know, he is going to want to catch for the sake of, like Carlos said, the arbitration. If you look at, you know, we could talk about this. If you look at the trade market right now, how many catchers are out there that are like Wilson Contreras? Is that like it? Is there more that I'm missing? Like, it's
Sean
like
Murphy.
Sean Murphy, yeah. But like, other than that, it's like, it's not a huge deep thing. So like Carlos said, he stays there and they, you know, they have and he's still really good and he still hits well and he figures out like how to stay on the field. They have such a leg up on everyone. I mean, we just joked about Jacob, you know, Andrew Kitzner, and you know, we just watched Jacob Stallings play for the Marlins this week. I know he had two hits yesterday, but it's like, you know, you're talking about those two guys and we have Tyler Stevenson. It sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a different discussion if the Reds are legit contenders right now and
right.
They had a DH or a first base that they're playing that's not cutting it, but they're not contenders right now. And he wants to catch. Dude didn't catch 300 games in the minor leagues for the hell of it. Like, you know, you don't do all that and work to get to the big leagues to move to first base.
And just quickly about the height, I actually did some research on that 2 years ago, and there's only two players in the MLB that season taller or as tall as Tyler Stevenson behind the plate. Both were pretty insignificant players. I don't even remember who they are. However, that's kind of changing. We're starting to see some taller catchers. Sam Huff, who plays in Texas, he's kind of a backup catcher / prospect, is like uber tall. It's starting to become more and more of a thing, and you see it with a lot of these prospects. There's just taller catchers now. I think development in the lower levels are realizing how important catchers are, and we see that in football. Everyone started to transition their kids to wide receivers and DBs because that's where the money's made, and that's where you can see value. I think a lot of players at younger ages are starting to play catcher and developing into catchers because they realize the value they can bring. So I'm not as worried about the height.
Yeah, and the idea, like Resin 4 is asking, is there a world where we can tap into more power if he's not squatting 9 innings for 150 games per year? He's way too young to even bring that into an equation right now. Like, if he's 30 years old, then yeah, maybe. But he's not there yet. Like, his legs are fresh. They're going to be fresh for a long time. So I really don't think that's even factors into the equation.
The most important part of a catcher's job is to call the game and to manage the pitching staff. And correct me if I'm wrong there, Carlos, but whatever you get with the bat is an added luxury. And that's what Carlos has been saying of why he is so valuable as a catcher. Because what you need to focus on, number one, and that's why you don't see as many good hitting catchers, is because they focus so much more on calling the game. And that's why it takes so long for them to develop in the minors. It's because in college, you don't call the game. It's called from the dugout. So you have to kind of learn how to call a game in the minors, and it takes longer. And that's why you see catchers debuting at 25 instead of 22, 23.
More on that tomorrow with our interview with Joe Kutuska.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
No, no. Look at this tease work that you guys are doing. You guys are getting this teasing
always
stuff
promoting, out. Man.
Always promoting, always selling. So we did talk about Luis Castillo tonight, obviously, but last two nights before tonight, Nick Lodolo and Hunter Green made starts against the Marlins, and back to back, you know, they combined for 12 and a third, combined for 7 hits. I mean, I'm sorry. No, I got that wrong. They combined for just giving up four runs, only 2 are earned, 18 strikeouts. Pretty impressive, but by the two young guns. What you want to see as far as like having promising starts in the, I know they lost 2-1 last night, but, you know, I thought Hunter Green was really good. I was there, got to see him in person. It was pretty impressive.
I thought it was very smart of the Reds to push them back to the Marlins, who are struggling hitting, especially Lodolo. The Marlins are, I think, the worst team against left-handed pitching or towards the bottom. So I thought that was a very smart move. And, you know, hey, look, does, you know, dominating the Marlins mean a lot? Maybe not right now, but this is a big league team, and you know you want these guys to continue to develop and continue to build some confidence. So, I'm excited they got off to a good start. Hopefully, these guys can have a really good second half. Green probably doesn't have all that much more left this season. I would think Lodolo still's got quite a bit because he has been hurt so much. But yeah, I mean, hey, nice to see those guys get off to a good start.
Yeah, well, Hunter's lined up to pitch in Miami next week too, right? I know we'll get to it later in the slides, but
yeah, I'm guessing they'll probably shut Hunter Green down sometime in September, probably early September.
Yeah, that's like 5 weeks away, and it doesn't seem like it.
I don't think he'll throw the whole year. I mean, if he does, I'll be okay with it because
I would be shocked, especially since they haven't really.
I would be shocked too. Not I'm not saying that that's what I would want, but I'm like thinking what the Reds would do.
I'm thinking if they would be trying to get him all year, I don't think they would have been like letting him throw 118 pitches or whatever he threw. I think they would have been limiting his innings in game, and they haven't done that really all year. They've let him go out, full, as long as he
could
go.
What's his most innings pitched?
I think it was the 7 innings against the Pirates, wasn't it?
No, like total for a year.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant per game.
While Nick looks that up, I'm sure, what I've seen from these two pitchers, and I hope everyone can realize when I was saying I was higher on Lodolo than Green, I hope that they realize it wasn't a slight against Green, and we see why I was saying that about Lodolo. He's a special pitcher. Green is, kind of taking his bumps right now. He has good outings and really bad outings at times, but what you've seen from him in those highlight outings is what I think will start trending towards that. It'll be a lot more consistent going forward, which honestly, seeing these two pitchers pitch this way makes it a little bit easier for the Luis Castillo discussion. And I'm not saying they're going to become Luis Castillo. I'm just saying it's not like you're trading away a guy with nothing in the pipeline below you. So everyone should be excited about these two pitchers, including Graham Ashcraft, who I know has been a little bit shaky, but that's rookie pitching for you.
Yeah.
It's up and down.
Yeah, and you know, like we've said, I know he's been hurt for most of the year, but Connor Overton looked pretty good too while he was with the major league roster. Certainly a much lower ceiling than those three, but and Chase Petty, you know, Chase Petty just got called up to single to high A. So
yeah, Ashcraft's got a 4.05 FIP right now. So I mean, I consider his season a smashing success to this point.
Yeah, I do too. So,
for our podcast audience, Green is up to 96.2 innings now. Last year he had 106.1 combined. So I don't know. What are they usually, Carlos? Is it like 30, 40?
I would say 20 to 30 more.
Extra. Yeah. So like, yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I mean, they could.
September, mid-September maybe?
I would think they're going to let him continue to just like pitch as deep into the games as he can go. I mean, they could like do like skipping a start, only having him go 3 or 4 innings, but I don't see them going that route.
Yeah, I would rather them like let him go to the 7th inning than letting him have a couple of extra more games just to go to the 5th inning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
I'm 100% with you on that. I totally
agree. just more saying I've seen some teams do that before, but
the Tigers did it last year with Casey Mize against the Reds. He got pulled in the 4th inning with a no hitter, I believe.
Yeah.
I think the Reds did it with Tyler Mallon. Oh, actually, he threw like 100 pitches in 4 innings. But when it was against Arizona last year, he had a no-hitter. Yeah. Let's talk Jonathan Indy real quick, because obviously, you know, the last 15 games has been playing really well. He's got another hit tonight. I think he's got a hit in every game in this series so far, at least. Obviously, he had the grand slam the other night on Monday. So, Clay, you weren't on when we had this conversation a couple weeks ago, so I am curious your thoughts. We discussed with his defensive issues at second base and his strong arm. Could you see a situation in the future where Jonathan Indy goes back to where he was drafted as a third baseman?
I could see that. I could also see him moving to left field. He has the athletic ability to become a good outfielder if they go that route. I don't think that he's going to stick at second, just from what I've seen. The Reds have some infield prospects, as we all know. I'm sure that we'll get to some, but I don't think a move to left field's out of the question. I hope they do it in the offseason and not what the Reds have been accustomed to doing and just throwing players at positions they've never played in the middle of the season. I'm sorry. I was reading the message on that.
Yeah.
That Evan put on the
Jack Curry, he's the Yankees television reporter, just reported that they got Benintendi. So
is there a return yet? Because that could impact Castillo.
I will let you know when I find out, if, but it doesn't look like anything's been reported yet.
So I guess they're not worried about those couple trips. Guess they're not too worried about those trips to Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that maybe makes Mally on the table. I don't think Mally, for other reasons. I think they want like that.
Yeah, I agree.
Ace field.
Is there somebody, Nick? Is there somebody that they could keep to, since you know the MLB and MLPA didn't agree to a terms of the international draft, that the Reds might want to keep? They could get somebody better.
You talk like the qualifying offer.
Yeah.
I think Mally maybe. You know, I think it. Castillo, in my opinion, I mean, he should get way more than anything you would get in a qualifying offer. So I don't think it changes, in my opinion, Castillo. Mally is maybe a possibility. Again, if you're not getting a great piece back offered right now, then you hold on to him. Maybe you look at trading him again in this offseason. And if you can't, well, hey, bring him into next year. See what happens with kind of the rest of the core. And then maybe you think about extending him, maybe not, and you get a qualifying offer at the end of the year. So I think Mally maybe changes it. But again, I'm still shopping him if I'm the Reds. But it makes it interesting. It makes me not as desperate to trade him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, big news, Eric, while we're live. But yeah, I like what Clay was saying. I didn't even think about left field. Like we said, like, you know, a lot of these plays he's making at second base are strictly his athleticism just kind of kicking in. So we know this probably isn't where he's the most comfortable. So really kind of excited to
get like swole like a Dan Ugla. Just be like,
or like his dad.
Remember Dan Ugla? Like, I don't know. Oh, yeah. That guy's forearms were the size of my torso.
What is it? Cespedes Barbecue. We've had them on a couple of times. They have a segment on their show called The Good, The Bad, The Ugla. It's pretty funny. Yeah. So, Benintendi for three minor leaguers. We head back to the Royals, according to Jeff Passan. Also, shout out Nick Kirby getting that out as fast as like the tweet being posted. So, shout out Nick. Wow. Always love when news breaks while we're on the show and completely throws everybody off. So, let's get to some Reds minor league rehab assignment updates. Real quick.
Well, one more quick point on India before we move on. And I just wanted to add this. I definitely think, man, if Jonathan India can finish this year strong offensively, I agree that they should probably look at moving him. I think that makes me feel so much better about the Reds long term. So
me too.
My only thing to add. All right, rehab assignment updates presented by Bet Online. Art Warren threw a bullpen session this past week, so he's looking at going on a rehab assignment soon. Justin Dunn, not pitching very well for Louisville, was actually reinstated and then optioned. So kind of interesting if the Reds...
That's no bueno, right?
No, not good, Bob.
It's only 5 starts, so I don't want to panic yet, but he has struggled. So be interesting to see if the Reds did trade Castillo and Malley, if he gets called up or not, or if they hold up, have him try to get a little more confidence going. Albert Almora Jr. started a rehab assignment tonight. Jake Fraley, 108 rated runs created plus through his first 10 games at AAA. And Aristides Aquino, 7 home runs, 187 weighted runs created plus in 17 games with the Louisville Bats this season. So congrats to Aristides Aquino on a fantastic rehab assignment.
If there's
so
a definition
far.
Of a 4A player, it's Aristides Aquino.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to Late Night Red Talk Prospect Watch presented by Bet Online. Ellie De La Cruz in his first 4 games at AA, 4 for 18. So off to a little bit of a slow start.
That's the one.
Matt McClain, he's up to a 118 weighted runs created plus on the season, 12 home runs, 16 stolen bases. Alan Serta, 19 home runs, 125 weighted runs created plus. He's up at Chattanooga, promoted just before De La Cruz. And then Chase Petty, 318 ERA so far this season. So I believe Clay had a little bit to talk about each one of those guys. So, Clay, the floor is yours.
I'll go in order. Ellie, I don't think I need to talk much about. I'll save Carlos the time there. I think everyone's talked and read enough about Ellie De La Cruz, incredible player. Matt McClain, he's only played shortstop, which is interesting to me because I thought that they would try to move him around some. He's played just primarily shortstop. So I figured that, maybe they'd put him in the outfield or put him at second and third or something. The walk rate's great, 14.3% walk rate, 30.5% strikeout rate is a little bit concerning. A little bit more power than last year. I wish we had the launch angle stats on him. I know Carlos is going to laugh when I say that. 16 stolen bases, so a little bit of speed there as well. His speed score, Carlos, listen closely here. Speed scores, we're talking about a prospect. 8.5 out of 10. A lot of speed.
Oh, shit, that's dope.
For Matt. A lot of speed for Matt McClain. 49.7% pull percentage, which is a little bit higher than I'd like to see for his profile. Alan Serta, a player that I really like. This is a boomer bust type. And the reason why I asked Nick to highlight him this week is because he's on the 40-man roster. This is a similar situation that we saw to Jose Siri when he was on the 40-man roster. Not exactly polished enough to be called up. Had to put him on to protect him from the Rule 5. This is a guy who's probably going to get a chance in 2023. 16.9% walk rate, 36.5% K rate in high A. In double A, he's not performed well. It's been a short stint in double A. 13.3% walk rate. Pretty much he's a 3 true outcome guy. He's going to draw a walk, he's going to strike out, or he's going to hit a home run. His swing is just all or nothing. He needs to calm the swing down a little bit.
and maybe put some more balls in play. But if you just type his name in on YouTube and just watch his home runs, like crazy pop. If he can put it all together, and you see his WRC plus is high because of his slugging and on base is helping out as well. I do think he could play a role into the future of the Reds. He just has to quiet that swing down and make a little bit more contact instead of striking out so much, which could, you know, lessen the power, but we'll see. Chase Petty. A lot of people were concerned with his velo coming into the year. What you have to understand is when he was in high school throwing 100 miles per hour, you strike everybody out in high school with 100. You don't have to locate it at all. When he was brought into the Reds, they decided to lessen the velo and teach him to pitch more, is at least my take on him. You know, teach the command, show him how to pitch instead of throw. Right now, he's at 8.31 Ks per nine, 3.18 walks per nine, 59.8% ground ball rate, a ground ball machine. We like to hear that, right, Carlos? His last outing, he touched 96. He had been about 93, 94, 95. He touched 96 last outing. So maybe things were starting to trigger in the right direction there. The slider, 81 to 83 miles per hour. If you can get 96 in a slider at 81, 83 with good movement, and he does have great movement on his pitches. I think Chase Petty is a better prospect than I initially thought. From what I've seen, he just turned 19 years old. He turned 3 months ago. And he's already in high A. I thought it was an aggressive assignment. I thought he'd finish the year in low A this season, but the Reds know a lot more than I do.
I just want to say one thing about these prospects. So being up in Cincinnati this weekend, I was able to talk to a buddy of mine who so happens to play professional baseball. He says, if you throw 101 miles an hour, I don't give a shit. We are all geared up for it. We can do whatever we want for it. What else do you have? So I'm so like these prospects throwing as hard as they can. Cool, 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 cool story. Tell me about pitch number two and number three.
I'm more concerned with the most important
thing with every one of them.
Yeah. I'd rather see late movement on pitches than velo. The most important velo is exit velocity. That's the most important velo. I don't care how fast you're throwing. How fast is it coming off the bat? That's what I want to know. You can throw 100 miles per hour, but if it's constantly coming off the bat hard, who cares? I mean, Joe Mantiply is pitching really well this year, and he's throwing a fastball 7% of the time out of the bullpen. He doesn't throw fast, but he's effective because he misses barrels. He's allowed, I think, one or two barrels all year long. That's the more impressive thing. Late movement. I recently read a book by Jason Kendall, who was a catcher for years in the MLB. And he talked about, as a catcher's perspective, he cared more about pitchers with late movement because it's so much harder to square up. And that's what's more important than throwing 100 miles per hour. I know it's not sexy on Twitter with the highlight reels and the pitching ninja stuff, but if you have late movement on your pitches, and there is a great YouTube video, I'll send it to Nick if he wants it for any reason, but it's a video behind the plate, and you can see the movement on Chase Petty's stuff. And you can see that late movement, and you can see the balls breaking well. It's not straight at all. We obviously don't have the advanced data to the public on his pitches, but I'm sure it would grade well.
Only other thing I would add, kind of more of a question, I guess, for Carlos. I mean, sure, I'm with you. Movement is huge, and I totally agree with everything you're saying, but the velocity does make the margin for error a little bit bigger, right? I mean,
nope, not anymore. That was a thing like 5-6 years ago, but everybody is throwing 96 to 98. It's not a thing anymore. That velocity is out the window. That's cool, but if you can throw 96 wherever you want at the four corners of the zone, then we're talking.
So I have here a list. You can't see it. Sorry. I thought you'd be able to. It's the top 20 pitchers with average fastball velocity in the MLB. And you're probably wondering, okay, how many of them are good? Number one's Hunter Green. I'm not going to read the whole list. Spencer Strider, Corbin Burns, Sandy Alcantara, Garrett Cole, Shohei, Luis, Dylan Cease. I mean, it's mostly good pitchers. Now, what those pitchers also have is movement. You don't see anybody on here. I'm looking right now. There's Rosani Contreras and Mitch Keller. Those are the two that you're probably thinking they shouldn't be in that caliber. So I do think velo matters. I just don't think it's the only way to be a good pitcher. I just think too many people focus strictly on velo only. Obviously, if you have that, it's going to help your secondaries if they're at, you know, a drastic difference in speed. But at the end of the day, you have to locate it. So if you have velo and you can't locate it, welcome to the bullpen and welcome to Double A, and you're not going to make it.
Two more quick questions we got from the chat before we move on to the schedule. We'll let Tim do that. Adam, is it going to take a Farmer trade for Barrero to play this year? I mean, I think Farmer gets traded here at the deadline, but if he's not, I mean, I think Barrero is going to be up soon. If Drury's moved, I mean, there's going to be spots to either move Farmer or move Barrero. You can fight about that. I don't really care. I just, you know, want him up getting at bats more than anything else.
Barrero did hit an opposite field home run tonight as well, which is a great sign.
Yeah. The Reds are going to want him up soon, start seeing what he's got. And then the other thing, does TJ Antone exist? Antone's out for the year. So we're hoping that he can come back next year. And I mean, look, you get Antone, Sims, and Diaz all healthy. I mean, man, you could really turn a crap bullpen into a pretty good bullpen out of nowhere, right? So, yeah. And then we did get the return, so we'll go ahead and do that. Yankees sent Beckway, Chandler Champion, and TJ Seikman to the Royals for Benintendi. None of those players were anyone I ever mentioned in any Reds talks, so I don't think that impacts Castillo.
I can help you out with the top 30 for them.
Read them player by player first, please, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Beckway was the first name mentioned, and I see him at number 21 in the top 30 prospects for the Yankees, according to Pipeline. Nick has it up. Sorry, Nick. I was trying to buy you a little bit of time there.
I had it from the previous slides from we had said a Yankees podcast. So, yeah.
Do you have the rest of the top 30 or just the top 10?
Just the top 11. You can't fit 30.
Okay, well, then pull those names back up because they're not in the top 11.
So, yeah, I mean, it really doesn't impact Castillo at all.
They got the 21. They got number 19, which is Seikman. And I think the other one was the not in the top 30, according to Pipeline. That seems like an extremely light return to me.
Yeah, so they got plenty to give for Castillo.
Yeah. That is very strange to me. Andrew Benintendi is a really good player. He's not a power bat, but that seems light. I know his deal's expiring, but even then, that seems.
I remember seeing that Benintendi was the number one. Who was it that had him as the number one player at the deadline? Clearly, they were dead wrong. I don't remember who it was, but someone ranked him as number one. I was like,
was it Keith Law? That sounds like a Keith.
Or no. He wasn't number one. He was. I think Contreras was number one. He was two, but he was ahead of Castillo. And I was like, "There's no way. There's no way." Oh. Yeah, Resin 4 has got it, of course. MLB Trade Rumors was who did it. I don't understand that.
Yeah. All right, so here's the schedule coming up. Obviously, tomorrow is the final game with the Marlins. Graham Ashcraft taking the ball against Daniel Castano. And then the 10-game homestand ends this weekend with the Orioles coming to town for three. Mike Minor versus Dean Kremer, Tyler Malley versus Austin Voth, and Nick Lodillo versus Spencer Watkins. If you look at the Orioles, they're like a really funny team because they just won 10 in a row. They're in last place, but they're two games above 500. And as I mentioned earlier, 2.5 out of the wild card in the American League. So kind of a really unique baseball club. Actually, are they still in last place? They passed the Red Sox. How bad the Red Sox have been? I can't remember.
They just passed the Red Sox. I do have a... Oh, okay, sorry. Go on.
No. You're good. Then yeah, they got the Marlins for three next week in Miami, and then they play the Brewers next weekend. So
I'm looking at the schedule ahead, and I do have one comment about Austin Voth. Actually, Austin Voth, he made a comment that when he moved from Washington, he was on the Nationals, to Baltimore, he's pitched well. And he said the reason why is because they have advanced stats and analytics that Washington does not have. And it just goes to show you there's still teams light years behind. And luckily, the Reds are not one of those teams. They have plenty in that department, which is a good sign. I mean, you're hearing an MLB pitcher saying he has more availability to his pitch movements, his advanced analytics on each pitch than he did with another team in 2022. It's just scary to think about.
Only thing I would say to that is, you know, sometimes it's just a change of scenery thing. I mean, the Nationals had like Strasburg and Scherzer, and they had an elite rotation and won a World Series. So, I mean,
at one point, Patrick Corbin was decent for them at one point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That could just be, you know, a change of scenery thing, but.
Good. I mean, he legitimately said that he himself said that they have more information on his pitches in Baltimore than Washington.
More information that helped him, maybe is how I would interpret it. Hey, maybe he's right, but I don't take all that with a grain of salt.
It's gotta be better than what to say in Toronto asking who Joey Votto was.
Manoah.
Yeah, Manoah asked who Joey Votto was. That was pretty funny. Yeah, we're coming up on the Field of Dreams game here in a couple weeks, too. So I guess that's
a lot of away games.
Yeah, after just playing like forever today at home. Literally had six games on the road in July. And then, then August, they're home for eight home games in August. So hopefully you got your chance to go out to the ballpark in July, because it could be a little bit more difficult next month. But yeah, I think we can go ahead and wrap this up here. This was a lot of fun. Thanks to everyone. Yeah, please make sure tomorrow, 8 p.m., everywhere that our show is, whether it's just here, the YouTubes, Instagram, Stitcher, social media, whatever, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Nick and Carlos's conversation with Reds Director of Amateur Scouting, Joe Katuska. A lot of really good insight, a lot of really great conversation. So it's really good. I bummed I had to miss it. But you guys make sure you please check it out. You're going to be really, really excited with that interview. So thank you guys for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. And of course, if you're checking us out, make sure you go to Bet Online and get your sign up for your 50% welcome bonus. Everyone have a good night, and we will see you next week or tomorrow.
And if there's any big trades that happen, we'll try to come on with a emergency show that night if we're able to make it work. So stay tuned. Go Reds. We'll be right back.
is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.